get there with MINT. Get there with MINT.
Hi there. Thanks for listening to MIMT's podcast. My name's Graeme DeGoldie and I'm rapt to be talking today to my therapist, educator and representing the industry at the highest level, Lily Chu. I'm going to talk to Lily about her rise to working at the Australian Tennis Open, Essendon Football Club, Melbourne Storm, the Paralympics, Commonwealth and Olympic Games, and her journey to get there. Let's see how her career began and get some takeaways along the way. Let's chat with Lily Chu. Welcome, Lily. Great to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
That's all right. You're on your way to a class.
Yes, I am.
For those that don't know, Lily also teaches at MIMT in our dry needling course and has an army of followers in respect to her teaching, which is fantastic. Lily, you have an amazing career. You're very humble. You keep it relatively quiet. But I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how you transitioned from, you know, where you began as a school kid and how you ended up in this amazing area that you have with so many representations as a Mayo and within so many elite teams. So could you tell us, where did you grow up?
Grew up in Northcote. Spent my childhood in the back streets of Northcote playing in the council paddocks.
Did you?
Yes.
In the back streets.
Got really dirty. So that was primary school, and then for high school I moved to Bundoora and went to high school there in Reservoir High. And after that high school wasn't ideal for me. I mean, I tried to fit in. It wasn't academically, it was a little bit challenging for me. Fortunately, my mother taught me maths, and that's what really got me through.
Wow.
And her background was teaching, so she made sure. So we spent our school holidays with lessons. Yes. And yeah. she even did English because she learnt migrant English and taught us English as well.
Ah. So your parents were what nationality?
Cantonese.
Cantonese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we had a Chinese restaurant in Northcote.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And did you go from there, so from your high school, did you go on to any higher education or anything like that?
Yeah.
What did you go to?
Yeah, I went to TAFE to study accounting.
accounting.
Totally different. Yeah, and because and I was quite good at that, and my teachers encouraged me to move on to the degree.
Yes.
And I didn't end up completing it. I went two-thirds of the way. And didn't end up completing it because at the same time I was working full time in an accounting role.
Yes.
At what used to be known as Lincoln Institute of Health Sciences.
Right.
That was my first accounting job.
Yeah.
And so just worked up through the ladder through there. And changes were coming. The school was merging with La Trobe Uni.
Yeah.
And I took up on redundancy package and went overseas with it.
Oh, good on you. Yeah. Did you, whereabouts did you travel?
Before that, I went to Fairfield Hospital, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So it tends to be a health background all through.
Mm.
And from that, they were offering packages as well.
Mm.
And so I took up on that and then I went overseas.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. And took about a year sabbatical I had to rethink whether or not I wanted to continue through the accounting role.
Mm.
And I didn't like being told, you've got to take your leave, you've got so much leave banked up. And when I wanted to take it, they refused them.
Oh,
yeah. So
gosh.
I wanted to be in more control as to when I'm taking leave.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, if I remember correctly, and I'm going back many, many years like I normally do, you were tied up with an old association. Was it the Clinical Society?
Society of Clinical Masseurs.
Yeah. Yeah. You were their bookkeeper, would that be right?
I was their bookkeeper role and I was also on the committee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for those newer type of people, I think that Andrew Gallagher used to be the vice president of that association at one stage.
I can't remember. It was Cayley, Peter Cayley.
Peter Cayley.
Peter Cayley and Eva Kovasi were the main roles in the Society of Clinical Masseurs.
And for those people that were involved in the industry way back then, there were four or five different associations, or maybe even six different associations that represented massage therapy and remedial massage back then. Myotherapy was still something that hadn't even been thought of. But back then the Clinical Society of Masseurs represented probably just as many practitioners as the old Association of Massage Therapists Australia, AMT. There was a couple of associations that people tended to lean towards depending on where you graduated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but that's back in the day. you've transitioned into manual therapy, soft tissue therapy. And you've had an accounting type of background. Was there ever in your wildest dreams at high school to get into this thing called massage? Or were your parents?
No, not at all. No. Going through high school, everyone is thinking of what work am I going to head towards? And most people only know the popular industries, and that's teaching or nursing.
Mm.
And for me, initially I thought teaching, but I was leaning more towards nursing because I liked the health part of it. And then when I look back to the places that I've worked, I've always enjoyed working in a health environment.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the common thread leaning into now.
Yeah.
When I was overseas for a year, I was travelling with a friend of mine and she often had headaches because she wasn't used to carrying backpacks.
Mm.
And so we often had to stop and I would give her shoulders a rub or something, and amazingly the headaches cleared. And so we thought, oh, this is really good, you know. And then it was a good icebreaker at the backpackers when we were staying, and good to meet guys. It was really good with the hands on the shoulders. So, and because there's a lot of Thai backpackers, I was doing some treatments just to get to know people. And then someone actually said that I could actually make a career out of this.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. And they said, no, in San Francisco they're all over the place. They're earning lots of money and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, the accountant side of me were thinking, okay, how much capital outlay, how much time, you know.
What's the return on investment here?
The return on investment, yes, absolutely. And how long would I expect before I could break even to make and then make a profit.
Mm.
So I had it all in my head as to what strategy to take. And as soon as I got back, I looked into some courses. So I was seeing my chiropractor and I knew he had a massage therapist there. It was actually his mother, Jan Sproul. And so I spoke to her.
Oh, you know Jan Sproul.
I spoke to her and she told me which school to recommend, and that was Andrew Gallagher's school, the Victorian School of Massage.
I looked into Camberwell.
Looked into it and started studying there.
Yeah. So
thank you, Jan Sproul.
Yes, who happened to be a naturopath.
Yes.
Who happened to work at my clinic in Mentone.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, what a small world.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, so you studied with Andrew and I think it was
Jim Doran.
And you did the what would have been back then like a certificate course.
Certificate. They all had different names back then. And physical culture.
Yes, massage and physical culture. Yes. Fantastic. It's amazing when you look back at the what was taught way back then, those so many years ago, to how courses are designed now and the rigors that students have to follow in respect to like business and all those types of things. Way back in the day, the courses were really focused on anatomy and massage.
Absolutely.
And that was what set you apart. And I think at the time there was Andrew Gallagher and Ralph Haddon at Box Hill and both had the similar mindset that anatomy is one of the major knowledges that a therapist had to have. Even way back then, they weren't scatterish type of courses. Mm. They were very, very specific. So you studied with Andrew and you completed your award?
Yes.
What happened next?
It was during one of the classes. We had a notice board inside the classroom that advertised it meant that I wasn't really paying much attention to the notice board. It wasn't until I was actually on the table receiving a demo from my classmate that she actually asked, "Where's Thomastown?" And I said, "Oh, that's near where I live." "Oh, they're looking for a massage therapist." "Oh, okay. And I don't know if I want to work in Thomastown." And she says, "Well, it's only a start though, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, I'll give it a go." And I did, ended up working there for 10 years.
Oh, what was the name of that clinic?
So it started off to be Main Street Chiropractic Care or something like that. And then the chiropractor moved on. And then we found another chiropractor to take over the practice. He took it on, and then we had to physically move because the council was taking that property. So we went to another property just behind the actual original practice. And then the chiropractor there retired, left me out in the cold, and I still wanted to keep working because I had the thriving business. Knocked on the door of a GP just across the road and I said, "You got a room?" And he said, "Yeah, come in."
Oh.
And, yep. So I continued the business until 10 years until I started to work here.
Yeah.
Something had to give because at the same time I was working at another clinic at North Bowen, North Bowen Physiotherapy. In the same situation there, I just rang them up and asked them if they have a room. And they said, "Oh, yeah." And so we made an arrangement and that's where I started there. So I had two concurrent businesses.
Yes.
And and then when commitments here at the school started to increase, something had to give.
Mm.
But also at the same time, I started working at Olympic Park Sports Medicine Centre.
Yeah.
That was a place that I actually aspired to work. Thanks to Rob Granter when he was running his courses, soft tissue courses from the clinic there, and it provided me a different insight as to where we could sit inside the health industry.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd like to work here in about 5 years' time, and in 3 years' time I was there.
Fantastic. With just going back a step to when you were working with the chiropractors, how did you find that relationship?
Very good.
I must admit that I was in a similar situation working with chiropractors. I always found that they were very forthcoming in their
Very helpful in sharing their knowledge.
Absolutely.
They showed me how to look at x-rays and they didn't have that much time but because they were busy as well and I was busy. But I found that they were very forthcoming in providing or sharing their knowledge as to the common complaints that people come up with.
I found it a great learning experience and I suppose that's one of the values of having an opportunity to work in a multidisciplinary type of clinic. You get to understand what everyone's roles are and understand the mythologies but behind how they work. So you've certainly had that the opportunity to learn from other practitioners as well. Was there anything that, you know, that you, was there any sort of technique or something that you got as a takeaway from working with the chiropractors?
There were times that we had mutual patients.
Yes.
So I was working in a practice that they would say, go have a massage first and then come and see me. It wasn't that type of production line. It was very much like, you know, I think you probably do better seeing a chiropractor and because there's some spots that I can't really address without having the chiropractic treatment. And so that type of relationship started to work between us and also he would feed patients into me in the same way, saying that chiropractic will work for you, but it will work better with soft tissue work. And I asked him how he found the difference with soft tissue care included with his chiropractic treatment. And he says the manipulation's easier, less painful, and it sustains the patient longer before the next treatment. So that was the best three takeaways in knowing how you have other complementary treatments that you can't always do it alone and don't you could try as much as you can, but you have to get to a point that you have to be honest with your patients and say, you know, this has to be addressed by someone else, a chiropractor or an osteo.
Absolutely. I think it is really hard for some newer practitioners who are really trying to prove themselves in the industry that they unintentionally try to fix everything to, I suppose, get people aware of them in business and the like. But you're 100% correct. You've got to sort of know the limitations that exist around the practice.
Scope of practice.
Absolutely.
And addressing that with your patient, because of your professional honesty, you're also demonstrating you have good clinical reasoning.
Yes.
And you understand that in order for your patient to achieve their goals, they have to consider other methodologies or other treatments that would augment what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And it usually works with patients who are committed and patients who have a clear goal where they want to be with their body work or their body care. And, of course, you also get your everyday patients who just want to ride the treadmill. I'll come to see you every month. I'll keep doing what I'm doing, all the bad things. I won't do any of the exercises. I won't do any of the stretches or change anything in my environment. But come the time when they say, oh, how can I fix that? Then I'll tell them, I'll be very blunt with them. I've learned how to be very honest and blunt with them, but in a diplomatic way.
Yes.
And sometimes, depending on my relationship with the patient, I'll tell them exactly what I think.
There's learning in that, isn't there? You've got to have build a rapport with the client and understand. Yeah. Them a little bit.
That's important, the rapport. And I think a lot of people forget about that. They think, I'll just do this, tick this box, tick that box, you should be fine.
Yeah.
But patients want to know, especially when they're spending more than 15 minutes with you, they want to know a bit more about you. They want to generate more trust with you because it's their body you're working with.
Mm, absolutely. And that doesn't happen overnight. I mean, there's some clients that you just click with straight away, but there's others that take a little while, and there's always those ones that you've asked a myriad of questions about their health and well-being, and you know, it's not till the sixth treatment in that they tell you that they've got a prolapsed disc, you know, or something along those sort of lines.
Well, it's even better if you can tell them that they have a prolapse.
Well, that's even yes, better, isn't it?
If you can tell from the signs and symptoms they report, then they'll ask, what have I got?
Mm.
Or you can just tell them without them asking, I think you have a prolapsed disc.
Yeah. And then it builds your professional reputation in respect to making a value judgment on what might be wrong.
Sometimes you run the risk of the patient leaving too much trust in you. They say that they reach a point that their body becomes in such painful or dysfunctional that they entrust too much of the care to you. And then you still have to draw the lines of boundary to say that I can only do this, the rest is up to you and also up to another healthcare professional who can complete that circle of care.
Absolutely. Is there anyone from your wealth of experience that sort of inspired you in the profession?
Yeah. First of all, it was Jan Sparrow who set me on this path. Secondly is Mary Toomey, who is a physiotherapist, and at the time she did a talk, one of these in-service talks for us. She was working at Melbourne Football Club as chief physiotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
And what impressed me was that she was a woman working in a male-dominated industry in AFL footy at a high level. And I thought, I like that.
Oh, good on you.
And I'd like to work with her one day. And I ended up working with her as soon as someone told me that Mary was looking for massage therapists at Melbourne Storm. I never thought that I would work with rugby, because I thought the guys were going to be too big for me. Because Mary was going to be I was going to be working under Mary, I thought I'll put my hand up. So I went to see her, and 10 years later I was still there.
Oh, what a brilliant story.
Another one is Rob Granter, of course.
Yes.
When I finished my course, I wasn't sure which direction I was going to go because our industry is so diverse.
Yeah.
I did Reiki, I did Bowen. I'm thinking, yeah, okay, but I'm not sure if I could actually sell that. I don't really connect with it that deeply. I understand it. I know it works for some people, but I need something more. And that's when I fell upon Rob Granter's course and did a series of his courses and realized this is where I want to be. This is the pathway I wanted to take.
It's encouraging to learn all these, you know, different techniques and have an insight into Bowen and Reiki and all those other therapies. But eventually you learn, even that you learn what works best for you as a practitioner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you
build, have your favourite tools.
Exactly, exactly. And whilst it's great, to have foundational knowledge in other therapies, once you sort of hit your stride, particularly for recent graduates, you'll learn all the, eventually you'll find your groove, mm-hmm. and you'll develop your skills in a, such a professional way that you become very good at those skills.
It's also honing in on your passion. It brings out the passion, and when people can tell that you're passionate about it, then they will entrust with you.
Mm, absolutely. And so you did some courses with Rob, and was it the treatment protocols, or was it more learning to assess a bit more? Was there a point that you thought, yeah, this is it, or was it a combination?
Of things. The fact that he had a strong sporting background, he just returned from the Atlantic Games, and he was giving us a talk as to what the experience was like, and that also promoted his course, and that's when I went to do his course. The techniques and the clinical assessment were really what got me in. Yes, knowing the how to assess and knowing with the assessment what part you can play in changing this and what part other people can play as a team approach to change this.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there ever a sort of like a light bulb moment when you thought, I could do all right out of this?
You mean once I started on my way? When people started to come back.
That's always a good sign.
It's always a good sign when people start to come back and they refer other people to you, and then you don't have to rely on the compensatory type of patients like the work covers. You don't have to rely on them because, okay, they pay the bills.
Yes.
Because there's steady flow. But then now I don't see any work covers, and if I do, they pay the full price and they find their own recovery, the reimbursement.
Yeah.
Because I don't have time to do that.
No. Well, good on you. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break and we'll return shortly. We're back to Lily, and we're going to focus a little bit on her career in the sporting areas, and also we'll try and get some nuggets, some nice golden nuggets of advice from Lily. So we'll be back in a minute.
Get there with MIMT. Get there.
Okay, welcome back as we talk with Lily Chu. Lily, you've had a journey to the Paralympics. How did you get there? Was that an advertised job, or was that word of mouth, or what? How did we get to the Paralympics?
That's a good question. A lot of the work I've been in has been from word of mouth. The Paralympics was not advertised. The Paralympics started with networking. So when I started working at Olympic Park, I got to know a massage therapist named Mary DeMichel. Also backtracking a little bit, from Olympic Park they used to run soft tissue injury forums, and from that I met a massage therapist that worked there, Jo Yeoman here, who, who was massage therapist for the swim team, Australian swim team. And they asked us for anyone who's interested to volunteer for the Nationals. And so I put my name down, and through that I met Maria. And then from that we supported each other in getting into Olympic Park Sports Med. And then from there she started working with the wheelchair tennis team.
Oh, wow.
So through that she asked if I'm interested, and I said, yeah, why not? So these were volunteer events. So this is what networking is all about.
It's, absolutely.
Knowing the people that you work with, know that you want to work with them again or interested in working with wherever it takes you. And then from that, years go by, and she started working with the Paralympic cycling team. And through that, their budget increased, and they were the athletes were asked if they would like another a physio or a massage therapist, and they just said, hands down, massage therapist. So they had two massage therapists on the team, and that's when we that took us to World Championships and to Athens Paralympics.
Oh, fantastic. What a brilliant experience. Do you feel or would did you feel challenged in working with athletes with a disability?
It's certainly different. You are learning all the time and you're learning on your feet. And don't presume that you know. Always ask because you always ask the athlete where do they need the work. You could also see where it is. If they're in on crutches or they're in wheelchair, if when because they're in wheelchair doesn't mean that they are paralysed or anything like that. It's because they've had polio and they can't weight bear totally. Or they've got multiple sclerosis, which means their muscle condition can't sustain them standing all the time. So I'm working with one now in paraclimbing, and she's gone from walking frame, walking stick, and now she's in a wheelchair because she can't sustain being in a walking frame. So always ask about their condition because they don't expect you to know. And ask them what can you do and what can't you do. So establish your boundaries first, and then they're pretty independent, so they can jump up on the table first up. And also, I'm going to do a bit of name dropping. Dylan Alcott. I worked with him with when he was in the Beijing Paralympics with the men's basketball team, and that's when they won their gold.
Yeah, brilliant.
And he was someone had indicated to me that he's going to be the next superstar in Paralympic sport. And guess what?
Sure enough. Yeah. Gosh. There was no doubt about that. So was it – what did you enjoy most there? Was it the treatments? Was it the outcome of the treatments? Or was it the that winning feeling that, that you know, we're all getting caught up in when
in
you work
– in sport or in general?
In these – in particular, the Paralympics.
In Paralympics, the personalities are certainly much different to – able-bodied teams. They see you as an equal, as a friend. If they are going to get a coffee, they'll ask you if you want one.
Yes.
Whereas there's more clearer boundaries when it comes to able-bodied athletes. Always at the tennis when I'm working with the international wheelchair tennis players, because over the years they get to know you. When they finish their treatment, they always come back with a smoothie. what's your favourite smoothie? Berry, green, or
<That's>
so they bring back a smoothie for us, and they know we work hard.
Now, looking at your history for those people that don't know, you've worked Paralympics, What years did you, you've done them?
I've done Athens, Beijing, and they were the two main Paralympics. Also did some world championships with cycling.
Yes.
Paralympic cycling, that is. That was in Switzerland. That was fabulous.
Oh, fantastic.
Our coach decided to put us on the mountain.
Yeah.
Rather than stay in the in town, which
and you've worked at the Olympic Games.
Yes, I was based. Which one?
Well, that's what I meant. Which Olympic Games were you?
The first one was based in Melbourne in Sydney 2000 Games,
mm-hmm.
when we had the soccer contingent here, and at the time I just done my knee, so I wasn't able to go to Sydney at that time, and I put my hand up to be a local in Melbourne to help out there,
mm-hmm.
and that was my first Olympics. My second one is Tokyo, just last year. And that was fabulous too. Yeah. That
Japan's
was totally different
yeah.
because of COVID, and we yes. were in a bubble.
Mm.
And but we felt really safe.
Yes.
Because of all the strict medical protocols we had to be aware of and be trained in. And when you're working in such a challenging environment, you really have to trust in your medical team. They trust that we will be following the same thing as well. So there's a huge amount of trust and belief in ourselves that we can meet the goal and come back clean. And that's what we did. We came back. We did everything right and we came back and no one had any infections.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You also, you're involved with the Essendon Football Club?
Essendon Football Club for about 10 or 11 years. I just finished when COVID started.
Yeah.
Because that changed everything, changed budgets, and because they had to be in a bubble going interstate. We were more the therapists that were based in Melbourne. We didn't do the travelling because we didn't do the – we didn't want to be part of the training package or training team as such. We're just there to go in to do treatment and recovery work, and that was it.
And also Melbourne Storm?
Melbourne Storm for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the Australian Tennis Open for?
16.
16. You're a legend.
So all of those jobs were through networking.
Absolutely.
They weren't advertised. That was through word of mouth when people ask others, do you know someone else who could, who'd be interested in working here? And because people know that when they come to know that you're reliable, you're dependable, you're safe, you don't have a loose mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to keep confidentiality and know your boundaries. Know your boundaries in the training room as well, so you don't tell the physio what to do, you ask.
Absolutely. Yeah. I recall I was at the Australian Tennis Open from 1995 in the men's area, and there was an etiquette that you just had to, or a regime that you just had to follow. The first thing is you just shut up and observe and watch.
Absolutely. That doesn't change.
Yeah, and you just take it all in.
Yeah.
But a wonderful, wonderful experience. So you've got a wealth of experience. And for a lot of our listeners and people in the industry, a lot of them will never get the chance to work at such an elite level in a Commonwealth Games team or an Olympic team. So a lot of people relate to AFL football.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a big difference from your experience in the way an Olympic Games medical team would work comparative to, let's say, an AFL team?
You have more scope with working with the Olympics because you have athletes of any discipline jumping on your table. There's always some background that they're carrying on with them in terms of their physical health. There's always a handover from a physio or maybe even a doctor. Mm. So I had a handover from a doctor at the Beijing Paralympics. That was when a shot put athlete, wheelchair athlete, broke a finger during training. So he was doing bench presses with dumbbells, and because of his muscle control, he crashed the dumbbells and crushed one of his fingers.
Oh, wow.
Ordinarily, the athletics team have their own physios and hand specialists that work with them. But the doctor knew my techniques.
Mm.
He was from Olympic Park. He referred the athlete straight to me because there was a great deal of swelling in his finger and pain, and the athlete wasn't able to sleep. And, of course, there was that fine line as to what sort of medication can they give them and blah, blah, blah. And so the doctor recommended that I should maybe look into some taking care of the swelling. So lymphatic drainage was the technique.
Oh, fantastic.
So did that for an hour and treated him twice. And in the meantime, the doctor's instructions were stepping on the toes of the physios of the athletics team. And he explained why, and they needed to understand what I did. And once they did, they then asked, okay, what can we do? So with lymphatic drainage, there's a few different treatment protocols, different to the traditional protocols that physios understand.
Mm.
I said to them, when you're treating with lymphatic drainage, you don't use ice because it actually reverses the whole effect. So we just need compression bandages and rest. And his pain was resolved. He had a good night's sleep without pain. That was the main thing. That means good sleep means good recovery. And then he was able to compete 3 days later.
Wow.
And reached his personal best.
Oh, even better.
Mm-hmm.
That's well done. So in an AFL environment, it's much more structured than...
Very traditional.
Okay.
Yeah. It's always the ice pack, it's blah, blah, blah. But then, again, it's when you come to know an athlete well enough, the athlete will then ask you...
Yes.
What can you do about this?
Mm.
A cork thigh for me. I said, oh, that's been there for a couple of days now. And he said, yeah. I said, okay, do you want me to do some lymphatic drainage? And he says, yep. And we did that. And 2 days later I said, oh, it's moved. You can see the yellowing moving to a different spot. So that means that it's draining away. And he says, yeah, it feels much better.
Yeah.
There's a role in what we do in their recovery, and it's our job to try and educate the physios and doctors or whoever's working with the athlete as to what you can do that's safe for the athlete. That's the main thing, that's safe and that can be effective. And doing techniques not just on lymphatic drainage but also the other techniques that I use, dry needling and blah, blah, blah. There was a time that we were able to do what we wanted. When I was working in Melbourne Storm, we were allowed to do what we wanted under Mary Toomey, but when they changed physios, then the rules change.
Yes.
And because of the awareness with the what happened with Essendon when we had that supplement scandal.
Yes.
They right across the board of AFL, they then decided that the doctors had to control everything that happened to the athlete because it was their due diligence in knowing what athletes ingest or have had done to them that they are fully informed and they can control what happens to the athletes. Is their due diligence to the athlete.
So in the AFL, do you feel as though you're isolated from the rest of the medical team, or you know, I'm imagining the hierarchy is, you know, there's the sports doctor, yeah, there's the physiotherapist,
there is a hierarchy,
the exercise physiologist, and somewhere down there is the massage remedial massage therapist and my therapist. I would imagine in that sort of pecking order. Would you find it hard to converse with, let's say the one up above, let's say the physio, as opposed to like in the Olympic Games or the Para Games? You, I would imagine the lines of conversation would be easier in a that Olympic realm,
yeah,
than the AFL realm.
In the Olympic situation, you're better informed of the athlete's condition because we're working in a closer and more open environment. So the access to ask the physios or the doctors is easy. They're there. And if you want to ask further questions, then you'll ask, or you want to know if you could do something with an athlete, you check with the physio before. Sometimes, though, it doesn't always work for you because if you tell the physio what you think that you could do for them, this is what happened with one of the physios in Tokyo, he changes his mind about handing on and then he ends up treating the athlete all the way through.
Yeah.
Doesn't hand over the athlete to you. I think there might be a bit of professional...
Yes.
what do they call it? Jealousy?
Yeah. Every now and then.
Yep.
But
if you're working with the right team, it depends on who's supervising the soft tissue team. So if you in the AFL, we've had a change of a trainer being in charge. We've had an exercise or a fitness, exercise physiologist. They've been in charge. We've had the physio. And so... we've had all three looking after the soft tissue team. The physio is usually the best because you understand that you can go straight to them and ask about the injuries. Whereas if you have the trainer, you don't always have access to the physio because they're not there. The athlete usually tells you what injuries they have. Before you can touch them, they'll say, oh, stay away from this, stay away from that. And then once you think you understand their condition after a few minutes, then you could say broach the subject with the actual athlete saying, I think I can do this with this cork, for example. Do you mind if I do something really light? It won't hurt.
And yeah.
He'll say yes.
Okay. Yeah. There is that... that protocol in place, and I think it, as we reflected on before, it's a matter of just finding your place within the team and then slowly graduating to bringing in your ideas and skill sets. When you were at the tennis, just a little thing, and you've been there for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Is it as tense in the finals as it looks like on TV? Because I'm assuming you're working on one player and someone else would be working on another player.
Yeah.
And you're both in change room A or wherever the ladies are.
We're all in the same change rooms now. Locker rooms.
We're in the same locker rooms.
Yes.
There's some...
A lot of the times at that level, when it comes to finals and it's down to two players, it's only really one that would come in and that would be the loser. Okay?
Okay.
It's because the winner's too busy with all their commitments.
Yeah.
And if and they're euphoric. So suddenly they're not in pain anymore. Unless I have an injury to address, then they'll come in and have that addressed. It's usually the trainers that you see. The trainers are really physios. They're the physios that you see come on court. So when they say the trainer, they're the ATP physios or they're the WTA physios. They're the ones that travel with the team all the way through. And they're at all the tournaments and they have mutual records that they work with.
So in the finals, is there any sort of pre-event?
In the finals?
Massage?
It depends on the player.
A lot of them
are really in their zone. They don't really want a warm-up. Some of them who have had warm-ups all the way through, then they'll come up and have a quick warm-up on the way through. And the warm-up's only like 15 minutes.
Who's your favourite player?
Well, over the years, you don't really have a favourite because they're your favourite for the moment, but then compared to another Open, you'll have another favourite and then I decide there's no real favourite.
And then they retire.
Hey?
And then they retire.
And then they retire.
That's right.
But I am working with an athlete regularly. She lives in Melbourne, so I give her a special dispensation because she's probably the statesman of the tennis or stateswoman of the tennis, and that's Sam Stosur. And she's lovely.
Yeah.
I was a fan of hers when she was playing singles a long time ago.
Fantastic. Is dry needling part of your treatment protocol?
In tennis?
In let's look globally, say at the Olympics or AFL, where does dry needling, is it more acceptable in an Olympic team than it is an AFL team or?
It's different in AFL because since they've laid down all these rules about control of treatment and supplements and things like that, we've been restricted from applying anything else other than soft tissue work. So we could probably use the occasional cups, but when it comes to dry needling, they have limited us from using dry needling. In rugby, we did dry needling. I had some players who would prefer me doing the dry needling because they know I teach it.
that's a good endorsement.
Yeah. So they prefer me to do dry needling, but I'm not whipping them out all the time.
No.
It's only because my main job there is for their recovery and to do some treatment. But if they come on the table and they say, can you do some needles today, then I'll say, when are you playing? That's my next question. When are you playing? And usually we don't see them any less than 2 or 3 days before they play.
Yeah.
If they're playing in that window, then I don't needle. Absolutely. But if it's a couple of days after they've played, then I would.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite moment in your career? At an international sort of level?
Yeah, a couple of.
Okay.
Yeah. My first one was in the 2004 Paralympics when we were working with the Australian Paralympic cycling team. We were at the track cycling and these were finals and we had two athletes riding a tandem bike. On a tandem bike, you have a sighted pilot, so that's the person that sits in front who has the vision. The one in the back is the vision-impaired cyclist.
Yes.
So if the cyclist is going to crash, if they're going to crash, this vision-impaired one can't see it coming, whereas the one in front can, so they can anticipate what's going to happen. So what happened in this final ride-off, they were riding against Japan. They were riding around the track as you would, and then as they built up speed and more intensity, there was a sudden explosion. There was this type of huge bang, and it's when the tires had come off the wheels and the carbon fiber, the carbon frame of the wheel hit the deck, hit the the track, and that caused an explosion. Everything shattered. Of course, athletes crash. So there was an injury of some nature, we don't know what, to the vision impaired cyclist who has a history of gold medals.
Huh.
So his name was Kiran Modra.
Mm-hmm.
I had my own kit. I ran up. I just grabbed my kit and ran up onto the track because I could see no one was getting there very quickly. And I ran up on the track, and then other people saw me because at the time I was the when you're a massage therapist on a team and you're the only health provider, you become everything.
Mm.
Okay, so I had my first aid kit with me in a bag, and I grabbed that, ran up onto the track. Others followed, and then the track supervisors came. They took him down to on a stretcher into the medical rooms, and the volunteers didn't know what to do. They just, because I stood back thinking that they were qualified.
Yes,
they didn't know what to do. They were a bit in shock, and they had Kiran on the table. I had the coach at the door. The coach was saying, "I need a. You've got a minute to decide whether or not Kiran can go back on the track." So I just pushed those other people aside because they didn't know what they were doing,
yes.
Quite obviously. And I just said, "Kiran, can you get up?" He got up. I said, "Can you?" You just have to think on your feet. I said, "Can you raise one knee up to your chest?" And he did. I said, "Can you raise your other knee up to the chest?" And he did. And I turned to the judge, to the coach, I said, "He can ride."
Oh, fantastic.
So we just patched him up very quickly, brought him up on the track, and there was a huge welcome on the track, very emotional. Rode off again, and this time no equipment failure, and they won their gold medal.
Oh, how good is
that?
So
that was one of my favourite moments. Other favourite moment was just last year at the Tokyo Olympics when the men's basketball were playing off for their bronze medal. And we all gathered in the medical rooms. We finished all our work because this was our second last night. We packed up and brought out our party food. And we actually had that playing on the TV. And then we also had the someone's laptop watching the athletics as well. So we're watching them as well because there was gold medal. It was medal night. And seeing the men win the bronze medal was very satisfying because we did a lot of work with the men's basketball team. In their homecoming, this was about 1 o'clock in the morning, we all waited outside for them to come back, and then we raised a big, huge welcome. Gold medal, was as good as a gold medal welcome. Mm. And then we had a party that night, huge party. And that was our favourite moment. The next favourite moment was when the physio of the team actually came in the next day and wanted everyone gathered into the meeting that in the medical team and personally thanked us for our participation, well, our involvement with the men's basketball success.
Wow, that's a punch the air and, moment. How good.
And apparently no one does that.
Oh.
Yeah, just how and lovely. He also had a picture of it taken with us.
Oh, even better. How good's that? I always ask our podcast guests, is there some nuggets of advice that you would give any sort of therapist?
Yeah, there are a few. First of all, you never stop learning because if someone comes up with a condition you've never heard of, never be afraid to ask what's that about, and then or any medication. So always ask what this is for, and then it helps you understand the condition and how to treat them and what outcomes you can expect to have.
Mm.
Second one is to listen, be willing to listen to others, be open to hear what they have to say. This is anyone from patients to health professionals. There's a reason why people have that opinion, and you need to look past that and see why, where it comes from. It adds to your experience as well. Take any opportunities to be challenged. So if someone comes up to say, oh, there's this this gig, we need massage therapists, and you think, nah. If I said that, then I wouldn't have worked for Melbourne Storm for 10 years. If I'd have said that, then I wouldn't have had my introduction to sport, like I did 12 Herald Sun tours. If I said no, I wouldn't have done the Murray Marathon, which was my very first sports gig.
Yes.
That's volunteer, but you've got to start somewhere. It takes a few volunteer events before it becomes more real.
Yeah.
And respect the person. Be present with the person that's on your table.
Absolutely.
Don't look at your phone. Give them eye contact, not your phone. And listen to what they're saying. Don't just say, I'll just do this, 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 and see you later.
Yeah.
Okay? Networking is really the biggest thing. A lot of my work, about 95% of my work, has been through networking. That's through the people you know.
Yes.
Even though with the Commonwealth Games that's coming up, Commonwealth Games and the Olympics, I didn't know who was doing the selections. So I thought I'd put my best foot forward, do the application, and it wasn't until afterwards that I realised when it became apparent that I was on the shortlist that I knew, oh, okay, my tennis boss is actually on the team. And the tennis HQ doctor is on the team, so he knows my name. And then it turns out that people know me, and so the selection is very easy. And same went for Commonwealth Games. No one knew who was going to be doing the selections. No one knew who was heading the team for the medical team. And but we all put our applications forward. And turned out that we all knew each other.
That is, networking is just so important.
Networking is so brilliant. And really, it takes time though. It's not just first up.
No.
It does take time. And that's how it all came, started with the Paralympics as well. That was all networking and from doing volunteer events.
Yeah. And that's, and for people who aren't within that, say sports environment, that networking can be as much as going to industry events. It can be, you know, continuing to make contact with people that you're introduced to, professional training, all of that type of stuff. So Lily, when are you off to? We were lucky to get Lily in because she's shooting off shortly to
Birmingham. Birmingham in the UK for the Commonwealth Games.
Fantastic. Do you know which teams you're going to be working with at this point?
For medical HQ, you work with any team that's on the campus. And in Birmingham, it's a similar arrangement that's what's going to be here in Victoria for our Commonwealth Games that's coming up in 4 years' time. We're broken up into different campuses. So there's five soft tissue therapists, as opposed to in Tokyo, there's eight of us. There's five on this one, and we'll be split over three campuses. And so there's going to be a range of sports per campus. So in the campus where I'll be, we'll probably see the gymnastics, squash, hockey, and maybe some of the Paralympic athletes from swimming and the athletics, and the swimming and athletics will have their own healthcare team. They have their own physios, medicos, and massage therapists. So That's under their own separate budget. So we won't be seeing any of those. We shouldn't be anyway.
No.
For continued healthcare, they should see their own. I can't remember all the others, but overall we'll have there's cricket. Cycling has their own. Cricket will probably have their own as well. Weightlifting, wrestling, boxing, basketball.
All of those.
Yeah.
Well, Lily, we wish you all the best over there, and perhaps we could do a follow-up in once you come back and you've rested up, and we can get some more detail about what you actually did in Birmingham. It'd be wonderful. Lily, you've inspired so many students and practitioners with your professionalism and your humble nature in all you've achieved. So good luck for the Commonwealth Games. We're there with you in spirit. There's nothing better than getting that Commonwealth Games team tracksuit, which I'm sure you've got a team uniform for.
Not
everything.
Yet. That's all attended. Landing in Birmingham. We don't see it until we reach there, but we're sponsored by R.M. Williams, so we do get their boots.
Oh, you might get a pair.
Pair of boots. How good is that? We'll definitely get a pair of boots.
There you go, a pair of R.M.'s. Look, it's been wonderful to chat with you. And as I said, you're teaching dry needling. You've got a wealth of experience, and it's great to be able to hear from people like yourself, because there's a lot of therapists out there who aspire to be just like you.
Thank you.
So thank you, Lily. Thank you, Andrew, for our production manager, and we look forward to catching up with you on our next podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
MIMT would like to thank our host today, Graham DeGoldy, our guest speaker, Lily Chu, and our production manager, Andrew Garner. This podcast has been brought to you by the Melbourne Institute of Massage and Myotherapy. Get there with MIMT.